Has been pressed. Recording is on. Hey, folks, thanks for tuning in to the Banff Podcast. I'm your host, Mike Lafferty, and here with me tonight we have a cornucopia of artistic virtuosity joining us. We have Darren Calvert, better known of some on the Atomic Think Tank forums as VMAC, who is an awesome artist who, if you've been reading Greenhorn books the last couple of years, you've seen his stuff. Darren, how you doing?
I'm doing well, thank you.
Thank you very much for joining us. Really appreciate it.
Not a problem.
And we have Adrian Smith, who you're probably familiar with from various RPG products where he's worked on, some for Vigilance Press, some recently for Basic Action. What else have you been doing lately, Adrian?
Just working on some of my own stuff as well through Mrs. Oak Press, working on a Western book for Mutants and Mastermind. So pretty much freezing my time up, really.
Oh, cool. And thanks for joining us. I know it's very late there in the UK.
Yep. Yeah, quarter one again.
I really appreciate you joining us. Thank you, sir.
No problem.
Well, hey, Darren, the latest work I've seen from you is in the Game Master's Guide, which just came out in PDF form. And it just looks amazing. I mean, let's just open it up and say, what's the piece you're proudest of in this particular book?
I don't know if there's one in particular that I'm proud of. I tried some different stuff in this book that I hadn't really done before for Mutants and Masterminds. This is the second time where I was working entirely in pencil for the line art. So everything that's there, there's no ink to it. Just doing a clean pencil drawing and then applying the color directly over that in Photoshop. So the first time I did that was on the Warriors and Warlocks book to give that stuff a bit of a different look. But for more traditional superhero stuff, this is the first time I've tried working that way. So I was pretty happy with how it turned out.
Oh, cool. You know, it's I assume anymore that all the artists are working on Cintiq, tablets or something. It's cool to hear somebody doing it with, pencil and paper.
Yeah, normally with the pieces that I've done for Mutants and Masterminds, it's pretty much a traditional comic book, traditional modern comic book, I guess, where I'm penciling and then hand inking and then bringing it into Photoshop to add the color digitally.
Mm-hmm.
But I've been playing around lately with different pieces where I'm skipping the inking step and just cleaning up the pencils to a point where I can work directly over those.
Save just some time then, huh?
Not a lot. I guess it's more just for the effect that I find the line variation and some of the things that I can do in pencil, fading things out, and that it gives me a little bit of control that I don't have when I'm inking. So it sort of depends on the look that I'm going for. I mean, if we were to do another Golden Age book or something where you wanted a bit more of that classic comic book look, I would probably jump back to inking my pieces. But figured since, they are pretty open-ended as far as the look of these, that I would try something different for these.
Okay, cool. I one problem I have with some of these books is that they don't always credit individual pieces, but I noticed a lot of your stuff in the villain archetypes back in chapter 3.
Yeah, I think all of the pieces that I did for this one, 6 of them, were all in the archetype section, although they did sneak in a couple of older pieces of mine from some of the earlier books just as spot art in other places in the book.
Okay. Would you be comfortable with going through some of the archetypes and talking about the images and, inspirations and whatnot?
Sure.
Okay. Well, I'm looking at this big guy who looks a little like a feral pig on for the Brute. And nasty looking bit of business there. Could you talk a little about that picture?
Sure. That one was when they suggested for the Brute, the original suggestion was something sort of ogre-ish, and that was what I did originally with my pencils. I think he was wearing some sort of a fur, sort of a kilt thing originally, and had sort of bandoliers with studs on them, more traditional fantasy ogre look to it. And I don't think it was anything on the art direction side that made me change it. I think they just wanted to see something a little bit different. And I had had sort of the idea of doing more of an Asian-influenced sort of, you know, looking like a Japanese oni or that sort of Eastern demon kind of look for the character. And so that was the way that I went with the, you know, the big metal discs on the belt and the beads around his neck. And, you know, it was sort of just reclothing the ogre and changing a few of the details to end up with what I did.
Oh, cool. Hey, just a random geeky curiosity question. What do you call it? What do you call it? Weapon he's holding?
I'm not sure if it has a name. If there's a specific name for it, it's just a big club or, just sort of a big stone mace that he's holding there.
Is that image actually just pencils and then colored over the top?
Yeah, that's right. So I usually do a few quick pencils and then do any sort of cleanup or tweaking that I need on that and then print it out. And then I will take it to my light table and just do a clean trace in pencil again to get the sharp pencil lines and then scan that into Photoshop and do the coloring from there.
Okay, that makes sense. I say, because every time I try and scan pencils in directly, it just comes out to be a mess. And I know when I was inking and like properly inking and then scan it in, that wasn't as tight as digital inking, which is what I do now. So I was surprised because I said all your stuff. I immediately said that's digitally inked, but you just told me completely opposite. So I'm quite surprised. So
yeah, I don't think I've fixed traditionally inked pieces in Photoshop, occasionally taking lines out or moving things, but normally on the pieces that I do, they are either traditionally inked or, like in these pieces, they're pencil drawings that I've just brought in and colored directly over top of that.
Excellent. Okay, anything else to say about the brute before we move on?
Not too much, I don't think.
Okay. All right, then let's move on to the Imp, who I remember this guy getting some comments on the Atomic Think Tank, page 93. And maybe I'm a bastard for saying this. No, it's a great image. The first thing I think of is that guy who went Narf on the Thundercats.
Narf. you know your Thundercats references. Come on, man.
Why don't you just take my geek card and tear it up? What the hell?
You should.
I hang my head in shame then. All right. Well, Darren, tell us about this guy.
Well, that was definitely one of the influences. I think basically the art direction notes for this one were just that they were looking for no one particular animal, just kind of a critter, something that looked like some sort of mischievous interdimensional. You know, he's supposed to fill the role of sort of a, you know, Mixie's Pitlick kind of, or, you know, the Impossible Man from the Fantastic Four, that sort of interdimensional character who keeps showing up to irritate the heroes. And so, yeah, it was sort of taking that, you know, something cute and furry and annoying. And for some reason, they decided right away that he had to have six limbs. And it just kind of evolved from there. Oh, the other one that I was thinking about was it Chip from Green Lantern?
Oh, yeah, Chip. Oh, yeah, the squirrel alien, yeah.
Yeah. So those were all the various influences that came together for the Imp character there.
I can definitely see Chip now. I try to forget Chip and at all times. Now that you say his name, I can see what you're talking about there. Okay, cool. Well, hey, that worked out very well. He's got purple fingernails, too.
Yeah.
That's a nice touch. Okay, moving on. Lee. Navigating the PDF. Jumped up nobody. It looks like maybe Storm. Moving down. Mad Scientist. Mad Scientist is you.
Yeah.
And, wow, she looks a little like that gal off of Stargate.
Firefly?
That too, yes.
Man. 0-2 here tonight.
No, it's bad.
It's terrible. I'm going to blame... it's between paychecks. I'm drinking Admiral Nelson's spiced rum as opposed to my usual Sailor Jerry's. So it's only 70 proof. I'm not as drunk as I usually am for these podcasts. So I blame sobriety. So
are you too drunk, not drunk enough?
Something like that. Yeah. So this is, well, you're Canadian, you understand. This is Kaylee from Firefly is the inspiration?
Yeah, that was definitely the big influence there. And just sort of adding a layer of mad scientist with the goggles and the ray gun and, you know, the shoulder satchel and that sort of thing. Maybe with this one, my only regret is that she doesn't quite look crazy enough, that I probably would have, you know, she looks more like a smug scientist.
Which is to say she looks like a scientist.
Sorry?
I've got an uncle who's a chemist, let me tell you. Huge ego. Well, no, you can kind of see it in her eyes, though. She's got those Monica Lewinsky crazy eyes kind of thing going on.
Yeah.
So I love that ray gun you gave her.
Yeah, I was going for something sort of retro, I guess, with the mad scientist. That seems to be the way to go, is that they're still in love with technology from the 50s, ray guns and giant robots and that sort of thing.
Yeah, well, it kind of fits. I mean, Nikola Tesla was the inspiration for the original mad scientist back in the old Superman cartoons. So,
right.
Yeah, big fancy ray guns are a perfect accessory. But all right, cool, excellent. All right, so martial artist, that does not look like you. And master of disguise, going down through the guy with the big head, that doesn't look like your work.
Mimic.
There we go. This guy's all melty.
Yeah, that one was a little bit tricky, just trying to figure out how to do the transition between the goop and the body of the character. But I think they gave me the option of doing, he suggested either Princess from the fourth edition books, or the third edition books.
The Emerald City Sentinels, I believe.
Right.
Yeah.
Or I'm trying to think of this guy's name, Victor or Victory?
I think it's Victor.
Well, yeah, I think you're right. But I had never drawn him before, so.
Yeah, I've got his, I have his data file around here somewhere because we're going to use it in the podcast. So, yeah, but that's some cool, just this perspective and whatnot. It looks a little two-dimensional in places there. But it's kind
of, yeah, I was sort of trying to go for that, you know, made out of clay, not quite human proportions by the time you got down into his torso and stuff there, that he was not quite fully formed, sort of coming together. Sort of more like, I was imagining his body being more like Silly Putty or something like that.
You also did the mimic in the Plazam as well, didn't you? So it's quite interesting you've got two kind of same archetypes with completely different pictures. That's pretty cool.
Yeah. Was it the chain? Oh, that's right. I did do the mimic for the handbook where he was mimicking different limbs and had more of a robot look to it.
Super Scroll thing going on, yeah.
I was about to say Super Scroll and get my first successful geek reference for the night.
But I beat you.
Yeah.
Fucking stole it from me. All right. Yeah, he looks a little like Stretch Armstrong, doesn't he?
Yeah, I think.
Okay.
You guys aren't giving that to me. That's kind of a pity thing, isn't it? I'll take it. I'm not proud. All right. Well, hey, anything else you want to talk about this guy before we move on?
Not really. This one, originally I had the goop parts happening in sort of a greenish tone where he was sort of dissolving into slime, but that just didn't quite seem to be working, so I went with more of the putty color. I was trying to find something that looked like it was, you know, becoming part of him and that he wasn't just, you know, melting or covered in something, that he hadn't, you know, been dipped in a vat of something or whatever, but that was basically what happened with him.
Yeah, so definitely got like a plastic man kind of Sandman thing going on, so yeah, it works really well.
Okay. Well, hey, and moving down to page 122, it looks like you did the robot as well, who's kind of got sort of a MODOK thing going on with the face there in the chest.
Yeah, that guy, probably the biggest influence there was the Captain America villain, Arnim Zola.
God damn it, that's who I meant. God
damn it.
Curse you there in Calvert. Curse you. Adrian, you want to take over completely? I'll just sit in the back.
Oh, that's cool. No, it's just getting embarrassed. This is brilliant.
This is the entertainment value you get from the BAMF podcast, folks. Mike Lafferty's humiliation in public. So, let's talk about this guy, Darren.
Yeah, that one, like I say, Arnim Zola was a big one, so he was supposed to have the face on his chest, and some sort of, I think the art direction had either a camera for a head or some sort of weapon mounted where his head should be. And so I sort of, you know, tried to come up with something that was Arnim Zola-esque without being a direct ripoff. So that was where the sort of digital face on his chest instead of just being a video monitor, and just the colors and the overall look of the body of the robot. And the robots are always, well, I shouldn't say always, but are generally one of the most time-consuming types of characters for me to draw. That my background is actually in industrial design, and so it's hard for me to not keep working and reworking, you know, the shapes of different robot body parts and limbs. And, you know, I'll draw something on a knee that I like, and I'll move it up to so that it matches something on the head of the robot, or the way that I handled a joint or a connection. I sort of try to pick shapes up and reuse them around robots that I've done. So it's often sort of those pages, the rough pencils for those have been drawn and redrawn and redrawn over and over and over again until I finally settle on shapes that I like and sort of refine it down to the point where I can take it to the next stage. But fun to work on. Robots are always fun to draw.
You did a great robot in Freedom's Most Wanted, that underwater villain. I forget her.
Yeah, I'm just looking for that myself, yeah.
Do you remember what that one was called?
Yeah, I can't think of the character's name off the top of my head.
Or something like that?
Trawler.
Trawler sounds right.
Yeah, that was pretty cool. I've always liked your armor / robot designs. You did, back when I was doing War Games for Vigilance Press, you did a character that was pretty much your creation called Abro Arrow. Sort of a Canadian Iron Man. And, she wound up looking great. I remember we had some debate about whether it was going to be a female or a male character.
Right.
Remember we were talking about it on the forum, and you're like, no, it's a dude. I'm going to put a big package on him right now. But yeah, you do great armored and robot designs. It's good stuff.
Thank you. So, yeah, like I say, they're fun to work on. They just tend to be time consuming because I usually sort of jump into it without a definite direction. I'll sort of draw the body as a mass of shapes and then start refining, all right, here's what the knee is going to look like, here's what the elbow joint is going to look like, and sort of keep tightening them up from that point. So it tends to be a lot of, you know, like I say, erasing and redrawing and redrawing, and then I'll do something on the left arm that I like more than what I did on the right arm, and, you know, keep going over things again and again. But
oh, cool.
Part of the fun of working on this stuff.
Yeah, I like the crack you have in the view screen. That's a nice touch. Well, cool. Do you game yourself? Do you want to use any of these in your own campaign?
I haven't actually been playing Mutants and Masterminds. I have an occasional 4th edition D&D campaign, and I've been trying to make it to the weekly D&D Encounters sessions at a local gaming store.
Cool.
But I don't play nearly as much as I would like to, as far as, you know, I keep buying the books and I keep collecting for a whole bunch of different systems, but as far as actually having the time to sit down with people and play, it's kind of one or the other, I guess, that I need to either work less or game more.
Sadly, the work still pays the bills.
Yeah. Yeah, I need to find something where I get paid to play.
Yeah, that's called marrying a rich woman, I think. I don't know. Or winning the lottery. I don't know, something. Winning the lottery, having a rich uncle die. But, well, hey, I think that was the last of your pieces in the archetype section, unless I'm mistaken. And I probably
The psycho?
The psycho's you?
Yeah.
I did not realize that. Okay. It's got your name right next to his right ankle. How the hell could I miss that? Okay.
Yeah.
Well, let's talk about he's kind of wearing those outfits like the guys from Karate Kid.
That was not one of the influences on this guy.
Okay, well, what was the influence on this guy?
I don't know if there were any comic characters in particular that I was looking at for this. They basically mentioned the idea of the Halloween costume that he would be wearing, sort of a skeleton costume. And I sort of wanted him to look a little bit awkward and something was off, I guess, is, you know, anyone wearing a Halloween costume covered in blood spatters is going to look a little bit off, but like making him pigeon-toed and having everything be a couple sizes too small, you know, the sleeves don't reach down, the belly is showing, and, you know, his ankles again, and then, of course, the bloody knife and fingers coming out of his Halloween bucket there.
Oh, good Lord, I missed that detail.
That's yeah, I think those were right at the end. I actually emailed Hal Mangold, the art director, and asked how bloody should I go on this, you know, how kid-friendly, and he said, you know, go nuts if you want to put blood spatters and fingers, and so, yeah, those got added sort of at the last minute, but just something a little creepy.
Yeah, I used to have a plastic pumpkin much like that when I was a small child trick-or-treating.
Yeah. That one's pretty directly modeled after my memories of one that I used to have, so.
And that's creepy as hell. Okay, cool. yeah, it's probably also Arbor Day when he's wearing that costume, so.
Yeah.
Making you extra uncomfortable.
Oh, yeah, if you're not out on Halloween, then.
He knocks on your door, you're like, hey, do you want some apples? Sorry. Hey, Adrian, this is a dumbass question, forgive me, but do you guys do Halloween the way we do in America?
We do Halloween, probably not quite as much as you guys, but it's kind of picked up in pace over the last couple of years, but nowhere near as much as you guys know.
Yeah, it's kind of a big deal. But, all right, well, cool. I was just curious. Okay, that is significant. And the fingers, I didn't notice the first couple times through this book. That creeped me out a little bit, Darren. That's a nice touch.
Yeah, I don't generally do horror very well. My stuff always tends to have a little bit of a sense of humor to it. But, you know, little touches like that, hopefully.
Well,
he can look creepy.
He's a funny kind of scary. Well, all right, we've covered all your stuff in the GM's Guide. I know you touched on this a little bit before. Could you talk about your method a little bit? I mean, you're kind of an icon in the Super RPG art world, and, you know, could we maybe talk about, you know, your usual method and whatnot?
Sure. Yeah, like I say, I generally start out doing really quick sketches, more for myself. I keep a notebook with me all the time. And so I will sort of, you know, jot down ideas, possible, especially for the Mutants and Mastermind stuff, where a lot of the characters are supposed to remind you of other characters from comic books, you know, to suggest whether it's, you know, the Superman archetype or the Batman archetype or, you know, in these something like Arnim Zola or, you know, well, like I was talking about, you know, for the Mimic, you've got Sandman or Clayface from Batman or any of the other sort of copycat characters like that. So I'll usually sort of, you know, go through that short list in my head of all the other characters that I can think of that sort of tie to that archetype and then start pulling some research, pull down some pictures of these characters just so that I have them to look at. It's sort of tricky sometimes finding that balance between, you know, you want to be influenced, but you don't want to draw Batman or draw Superman. So
I draw a parasuit with not looking like Iron Man. It's pretty difficult, I find.
Right.
It's Iron Man. It's the Iron Monger or somebody. It's very difficult to actually elaborate a bit more. Yeah.
Well, and especially, I mean, for someone like myself, I've been reading comics since the late 80s now, and you know, you have this huge library of characters and costumes all floating around in your head. And, you know, to not imitate something that you've seen before is a really hard thing to avoid. But, so anyway, that's usually where I start out, is pulling down that sort of reference, and then I'll do some quick sketches in my notebook, just working really quickly. I usually do those sorts of sketches in pen and ink, and I have a bunch of colored markers that I keep handy, and so I will sort of, if I feel it's necessary for a character, I'll figure out what the color scheme of the costume is going to be. When you're designing costumes, that sort of thing, I find, figuring out sort of the balance of color in the costume, repetition of color, are you going to use green on the cape and the gauntlets and the boots, or, figuring out how much of a particular color or where it's placed on the costume is usually part of that early process. And then figure out a couple of quick thumbnail poses for the character, whatever I think is going to work best. A lot of these pieces for students and masterminds, you've got to give them a little bit of action. You don't want them standing perfectly static, but at the same time, you know that they're going to be framed sort of on one side of the page with the way that the layouts are done. So you've got to keep that sort of vertical composition in mind, that they can't be stretched out all the way across the page or shooting fire off into the other column to the point where, there's not going to be any room for text and stats and everything else. So figuring out something that sort of conveys a bit of character quickly in those thumbnails. And then I usually jump right into pencils, and then those go off to the art director. So Hal gets to take a look at them at that stage. I usually, unless I'm really uncertain about something, I usually wait until I've got at least my tight pencils to show him. And then if there are any changes to be made, if he's got any suggestions, they're usually pretty accommodating. I haven't, I can't think of too many situations where I had to do a major revision. Occasionally, like I say, they'll have ideas about tweaking something one way or the other, but, I can't think of too many situations where I've had to majorly overhaul a character or change something drastically from my initial vision of it. And once they've signed off on them at that stage, then I will usually print them off and take them to, I built myself a little light table for at home, and that is invaluable for this sort of thing, I find, that I can tweak stuff in Photoshop, print it out, take it to the light table, and then work directly over that to do my inking or my tight pencils for it. So if I decide I need to change the proportion slightly, or, move an arm or a leg, or, if I, decide to scrap part of the drawing, or I like something that I've taken from somewhere else, or that sort of thing, the light table is fantastic for that, instead of having to start all over again. And I still work traditionally for pencils and inking, and then bring those into Photoshop and just work over top on another layer with the color. And that's usually about it. Occasionally going back and tweaking things. But usually, as long as the art director knows what you're shooting for, I haven't had any, major issues as far as having to revisit or rework pieces for Mutants and Masterminds. It's all...
For your colors on Photoshop, are you using the lasso tools to actually... filling areas in, or are you actually hand drawing them? Because I've noticed on all your stuff, everything looks so crisp. It's really, there's no kind of
for these ones.
Of the shadows and stuff, rather than a gradient kind of thing. But
right, yeah, I went for sort of a two tone kind of crisp look for these ones, that I didn't really do any gradients on them. The stuff for the Hero Handbook, I had more gradients too, but on these, I basically lay down a base color for each area, and then select those and just use a hard-edged brush to paint in the sort of second, whether it's, the shadow or adding a highlight to the piece. But yeah, I will, you know, I'll pick a particular shade of blue to be sort of the base color, and then take a darker shade and paint in those shadow areas. And I mostly, well, getting a little bit more complicated here, especially for anyone who doesn't know Photoshop, but I will lay down those flats and then duplicate that layer so that I can always go back and just select the skin tone or just select a particular color on the costume if I want to grab all of the purple areas or grab all of the green areas, that saving that layer where it is just the flat colors makes that a lot easier down the road if you're doing a bunch of rendering to it. So, yeah, just little tricks. I mean, I think everybody does their coloring process a little differently, but it's definitely something where the more of it you do, you start to come up with a few little tricks to save yourself headaches down the road.
The stuff that I've been doing recently has been laying like a multiplier layer over the top of a standard layer, and then taking the same color again and multiplying over to give the shadow. So if you've got blue, you just lay blue and it kind of gives a darker shade of blue. But I have noticed you sometimes skin tones and some other tones, you have to tweak it slightly, bring it down, otherwise it's really too dark. Yeah. Like I say, getting technical.
Generally, what I'm adding to my base color is sort of a grayed purple tone. Mm-hmm. And I find that gives sort of a nice, you know, it's shading, but without making it, if you add a gray as your shading tone, it tends to really dull the color a lot. So giving it that sort of a pale grayish purple, I find, still keeps it looking pretty vibrant. And that's about it for as far as my process goes.
Darren, can I ask you a question?
Sure.
You one of those guys who has his notebook around?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, I don't go anywhere without having a notebook or at least a pen in my pocket if something comes to me.
A lot of the artists I've been friends with over the years, you know, trying to do Ashcan comics for conventions or whatever, they had a character or two they'd gravitate to. You know, some guys like to draw, you know, Batman is a popular one, or Wolverine, or Rom, you know, whoever. Do you have a particular character you gravitate towards, you know, if you're just doodling in your spare time, you like to sketch?
I don't know if there's a particular, not an existing character like that I draw over and over again. I know that, in general, I tend to prefer to draw monsters and creatures and the characters that are not entirely human, I guess, are more fun for me than the sort of the pretty boy characters that, you know, it's more interesting for me to come up where you're sort of getting to design the whole look, you know, the robot face or the monster face or whatever it is, that those sorts of pieces are more interesting for me than just doing your traditional clean cut, you know, normal human guy.
Square jawed, yeah. Straight-eyed, you know, yeah.
Yeah, those are fun. It's still fun to go back and do those kind of archetype characters like that, but as far as my own stuff, it tends to be more monsters and aliens and robots, and, you know, that drawing something that's not human is more fun for me.
Okay, that's understandable. Well, hey, before we leave the process discussion behind, Adrian, you're an artist, so you probably understand everything that Darren just said.
I did, yes.
Okay.
I think so anyway. I claim to do so anyway, yeah.
Okay. Well, before we move on to talking about movies or comics or whatever, you got any other questions or avenues you want to pursue in that conversation?
A couple of questions. I was just wondering, is a particular artist you follow or kind of influences you at all?
I don't know if a lot of different artists that I admire, some of whom my style is nothing like. You know, it really depends. There are a lot of artists I have an account on DeviantArt and follow a lot of the artists on there.
Well, just for our listeners, what's your name on DeviantArt so they can find your gallery?
I'm under D-Mac at DeviantArt.
Easy enough. Okay.
But yeah, there's, you know, sort of, I've always liked artists that had sort of a clean style to their work. I used to like Art Adams stuff a lot.
Cool. Yeah, brilliant. Yeah.
Mike Waringo was a big influence on my stuff.
Yeah.
Where it was sort of, you know, his work had that balance of looking a bit, it was always very bright and sort of cartoony, but he was still, you know, it was very expressive, and there's a lot of action to the stuff that he drew. And yeah, that was rough when he passed away a couple of years back. But, you know,
yeah, the Tedos book he did was excellent. That was not good, yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. It was, you know, it was hard knowing that you weren't ever going to see anything new from him. I really like Terry Dodson's stuff, especially sort of the clean cut, you know, the good girl artwork that he does. Just sort of browsing through some of the guys that I'm following right now. Chuck D on DeviantArt. He did, I'm trying to think of what his full name is. He did a bunch of the concept art for the Arkham Asylum and Arkham City video games.
Awesome.
And again, it's finding that, you know, his stuff is a really good blend of cartoony, but, you know, there's a lot of detail to it, so it doesn't ever look super cluttered. Who else am I following? Drawing a blank on his name. Ryan, the artist who has been drawing
Invincible.
Invincible, that's correct.
Ryan
Otley.
Yeah.
That's right. Yeah, and his stuff just keeps getting better and better. You know, his sketchbook pieces and
is it Corey Walker?
Stuff that he's doing on that. Corey Walker, I think, only did the first couple of issues, and then Ryan took over. But Corey did, I think, the first, I want to say, 5 or 6 issues, maybe. And then it's been Ryan since then, although they have gone back to Corey once or twice for a couple of issues. But, yeah, that is a really good book for art. And then there are other people, like I say, those are ones where you can probably see a bit of that influence on my art.
Ryan,
yeah, that's right. Funny enough, I was looking at my visible stuff when I talked to Mike about talking to you, and thought I could see some of that in your stuff. So yeah,
I think, is it Ryan Otley?
Yeah.
Okay. All right. Cool.
And then other, you know, there are artists that I admire, but my work looks nothing like, you know, Mike Mignola's stuff on Hellboy is amazing, but, you know, there's very little of that in the work that I do. And, you know, guys like Frank Miller, his stuff where he's, you know, the stark blacks and whites and the stuff that he did back on, you know, Dark Knight Returns and through Sin City and the other pieces that he's done, but, you know, my work doesn't look much like that at all, but still a lot of artists out there that I admire.
Have you seen his latest graphic novel, the one that's Batman but not Batman, fighting Osama bin Laden, Holy Terror?
No, haven't seen that one.
It was the best-selling graphic novel last month. So I,
really?
Yeah. Okay. Well, it was in the top two. It was in number one or number two. So someone's bought it. I didn't. But yeah. I actually was thrown out of a comic shop once for disrespecting Dark Knight Strikes Back.
It's not great.
No.
My only defense of Dark Knight Strikes Back is that there are a lot of ideas in it. It just seemed like he couldn't decide what his story was about. But, you know, he had stuff going on there, but it just became a huge cluttered mess of ideas with no real direction to it. So.
It kind of reminded me of Phantom Menace in that way.
Yeah.
Yeah, there's a lot of ideas, there's a lot of themes, but there's no,
Yeah, I this could, you know, devolve into a whole comic discussion, but I had imagined that it would be more of Batman as general when we got back to, you know, the Dark Knight Strikes Back, that idea at the end of Dark Knight Returns, where he was leading sort of the army of the Bat Boys or whatever they were calling them, the mutants that he had reformed, that was what we were going to see, was the idea of him as a general leading this vigilante army in the city, but never quite got to that point.
Yeah, kind of took some side paths, it seems. But hey, if you had 5 minutes alone in a room with Rob Liefeld, what would you say to him?
I don't admire his art the way that, I don't know if I ever particularly did, but there was still something fun about the stuff that he was doing back in the 90s. You know, it's hard to nail down exactly what was exciting about it now in hindsight, but I do remember being very excited about things like Youngblood when they came out. Like I say, you know, have kind of a hard time looking back at it now and trying to remember why, but you know, all of that Image stuff as it was coming out, for me, still fairly new to comics at that point. You know, it was really exciting to have all new characters, you know, no background that you had to be caught up on, that you were getting in on the ground floor with all of these characters, that they were building this whole new universe. And I was buying everything that I could get my hands on of that stuff. You know, Image was putting out books that were only lasting an issue or two, and, you know, Bloodpool and Deathblow, and man, I can't even remember half of the characters that...
The guy really loved creating characters, didn't he?
Yeah.
He used to be like, okay, I've got an idea for 4 more characters, we can do a new book. And then it would go two issues, and like, no, more people, there's more. But yeah, definitely one for definitely the ideas are there. You can see this was getting down on paper and out there to see if anyone likes it. I think. So yeah, I know what you mean.
Yeah, not a lot of follow through from those guys. That you know, you get guys like Eric Larson, who's been doing Savage Dragon now for, well, we must be getting close to about 15 years or more now. This maybe 20. I'm not sure how long Savage Dragon's been running for, but. Yeah, there weren't many artists there that stuck with the creator-owned stuff that they put out. I don't know how many different incarnations of Youngblood and Wildcats and some of the other Image titles there have been that haven't lasted more than 3, 4, 5 issues before they got canceled and revamped and relaunched. And definitely have a lot of respect for the guys that stuck with an idea and, you know, something like Invincible now, where I'm sure Invincible's up over 100 issues at this point, and that's, you know, to stick with a creator-owned book like that and not get distracted or swayed by, you know, some of the better artists that have come and gone over the years, where you can see they've gotten distracted by doing stuff for cartoons or doing stuff for video games, or just, you know, not having the attention span to stick with a particular book. And I know I absolutely would not have the attention span to keep drawing the same characters over and over again. But
it's a lot of respect for the guys that Big Nolan's kind of gone back, kind of drifted off, but kind of was always there. He never just abandoned Hellboy and such, and as he's coming back to do the Hellboy when that relaunches the actual, possibly the ongoing or these series link serials or whatever that's going to happen with that.
Right.
That's going to be excellent, yeah.
So Hellboy's dead now, right?
Yeah.
Well, he's comic book dead. It's, yeah.
He's in hell, I think. Literally in hell. So God knows what's going to go on with that. But, yeah, it's going to be good.
All right. Hey, we should mention your website, Darren. DarrenCalvert.com.
Yep.
And his gallery page, and you can see what Darren means by his favorite sketches being monsters, because I think a full half, if not more, of your images in your gallery here are dinosaurs or dire beavers or carnivorous plants or golems or whatnot. Or Warforged is the preferred
print,
yeah. So, cool stuff. Oh, wow.
Okay. I've got a question about your Demon Art page now. This is going to be really completely silly. There's some Doctor Who's on there. Are you a Doctor Who fan? There's some Doctor Who sketches on there. Are you a Doctor Who fan?
I am, actually.
Are you a long-time fan or are you a new Who fan?
I have to admit that I'm a new Who fan.
Oh, dear.
Yeah. I have been going back and educating myself on some of the older, I've been watching some of the Tom Baker, but yeah, it was the new series that got me hooked on it.
Okay, so out of the three of the new Who's, which was your favorite Who?
Oh man, I don't know if I would probably still give it to David Tennant, but I gotta say that the new stuff with now I'm drawing a blank on his name,
Matt Smith,
yes, has been terrific. As you know, as soon as Moffat took over as the showrunner, Stephen Moffat stuff, it's sort of like watching Buffy the Vampire Slayer, that any time Joss Whedon himself wrote and directed an episode, you could always tell that, you know, the dialogue was that much sharper, the ideas were that much more creative, and Stephen Moffat's stuff on the new series has been like that, you know, before he even took over as showrunner, that every one of his episodes was always that, you know, a step above everything else. So, yeah, having him on, and Matt Smith does a fantastic old man in a young body sort of thing with the Doctor, that, you know, his Doctor definitely feels like an old soul, but still goofy and not taking himself too seriously, and it's been really good. That was probably the biggest feeling with the Tennant stuff, was him wallowing in self-pity all the time.
The Tennant thing was, okay, where are the episodes he's going to shout? There's going to be a shout in the episode. Where's it going to be? Okay, where's the shout bit? Now we go for the Sonic Screwdriver a bit, and then we're going to, you know, so it's, yeah. But I personally, I think Matt Smith has done an absolutely fantastic job. He's probably one of my favourites. I must say, being in Britain now, and I actually got to see it, obviously, when it first was, as it was coming out. So my Doctor originally was the Fifth Doctor, Peter Davison, as the Doctor I grew up with. But, yeah, the new guys, definitely, I'm happy they brought it back. So but I've got fast click for Doctor Who TV. So, yeah, I just saw that and thought, that's really cool. So, I thought I'd better ask just to fulfill my own curiosity, if nothing else.
Yeah, one thing working on this sort of freelance stuff is that I almost always have something playing off to the side. I've got a little TV set up in my studio so I can catch up on TV shows and, you know, audiobooks and that sort of thing. So,
hey, you know, I'm on your DeviantArt page looking at your superheroes sub-gallery.
Yeah.
And I noticed that the Cyber Tribe fella Heavy Metal kind of reminds me strongly of some of your Warforged.
Yeah, I could see some of that coming through, the sort of the big hulking robot guy.
No, like I say, I love your robot work. I really do. It's a good-looking guy. Well, you've done a bunch of stuff for MNM3E. Cyber Tribe Pulse, Sister Steel, Rez, Digital Demon, Motherboard, the Powerhouse, the various archetypes for the 33 Players Guide.
Yeah, the Cyber Tribe stuff was kind of fun. They had me do those, I think it was another five pieces.
Mm-hmm.
And I also got to design the logo for the Cyber Tribe, which is not on there, but just as an aside for the people who grab those PDFs. But, yeah, and then the Hero's Handbook, I think I did a full half of the archetypes that were in the book, somewhere around that. But,
yeah,
I know.
Yeah, yeah, you don't play City of Heroes, do you?
I haven't, no.
Okay. Just because the helmet on your mimic looks a little like there's a robot helmet in City of Heroes. And, I got all the geek references wrong all night except for that incredibly esoteric one. I feel ashamed. But, cool work. The battle suit looks cool. The warrior is looking a little cooler than Aquaman there.
Especially he was... obviously, you know, supposed to be an underwater Aquaman kind of. I don't think the archetype specified that he had to be aquatic, but he's actually sort of loosely based on an old Blue Planet RPG character that I had created that was sort of a surfer character. I don't know. Blue Planet was not a huge RPG hit, but it was basically a setting where humans had colonized a planet that was something like 98% water with some small island chains that was just through a wormhole that was discovered within range of Earth spaceships. So it was a way to have a planet that we could colonize and travel back and forth to. But anyway, that was where he sort of came from, was that idea of the guy with the tan skin and the white hair, and and then I, you know, added on the hermit crab shield, and
that's a beautiful
shell bits. And
now I'm looking at your Paragon archetype for that book, and I noticed he has both a collar and lines on his boots. Can we go ahead and say Jim Lee was ripping you off?
Yeah, this was definitely before the new DC. I don't quite have the right collar notch that he has on all the Justice League costumes, but other than that, getting pretty close. Seam lines everywhere.
You might want to write him, ask him for a check. I'm just saying. He's got the money to spare. It's okay.
Yeah, I've really been enjoying the new DC stuff that, you know, there are hits and misses, but, you know, I have to say that there were a lot of DC books that I wanted to like that I had sort of lost interest in before the reboot. That, you know, Justice League for quite a while now has been iffy at best, but, you know, they've been using second or third tier characters, and it was nice to see them go back to, you know, it's hard to understand why they have to keep learning that lesson that the Justice League should be the flagship book with, you know, Superman and Batman, and it seems to be one of those things where every decade or so they remember that and bring it back as sort of the core team book.
Well, you know, you are right, because it works best with the big characters, the big seven, the big five, however you want to classify them. I will say that Giffen to Midas's run in the 90s with B-Stringers, I found awfully enjoyable.
Yeah, I'm not saying there isn't a place for that sort of thing, although when I was first getting into comics back in the late 80s, early 90s, the first comics I was exposed to were comics that I inherited from cousins and next-door neighbors and sort of the previous generation Justice League, and so picking up that book and having, you know, Guy Gardner as the Green Lantern on the team and Wally West as the Flash instead of Barry Allen, and, you know, that it just seemed wrong to me as a kid to have all of these B and C list characters on the team. But,
I'd never read Flash apart from Wally West when I was reading JLA the first time. Because Wally West was my Flash, and now he's gone. So it's like,
I am pissed off about that.
Yeah.
Yeah, it is strange, some of the choices that they've made. I have to say, as much as I still think of Barry Allen as the Flash, that I would have been perfectly happy if they had just left him as a, you know, heroic sacrifice sort of thing. That I don't really feel like he was, you know, a better character than Wally West. They had sort of written themselves into a corner with Wally West, giving him a family and children, and, you know, they didn't quite seem to know what to do with him. They also never really knew what to do with him as far as, you know, Barry Allen has the tie-in being the police scientist, where it's a good excuse to have him at the scene of crimes and involved in that sort of thing. It's, you know, like Peter Parker or Clark Kent as reporters and photographers, that, you know, Barry had that perfectly reasonable excuse to show up at crime scenes and find out what was going on. And from that point of view, it was a good change, but, an interesting choice. And the artwork on that has been really good too. The new Flash series, both right before the reboot and now since, with, is it Francis Manapul doing the artwork?
Yeah.
And, now that he's taken over the book, or he's even doing the writing on that one, just some really cool creative stuff that he's doing with the panel layouts and that sort of thing, different ways of showing that he's moving at super speed and, you know, able to do multiple things within a fraction of a second, and the way that he's laying out his pages is really cool.
So what else do you like from the new DC stuff?
Action has been really good. Going back to Superman as an angry young man. The new Batman itself I've been enjoying so far. I'm trying to think of the artist's name on Batman. He was the guy that
Capullo,
just...
Is he Capullo on Batman?
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, I was going to say that had done Spawn for a long time. But, that one's looking really good. What else have we been reading? Well, the Green Lantern books are still really solid. That they were one of the... They and the Batman books were probably the ones that got the least overhaul from pre-52 You know, it was sort of a if it ain't broke, don't fix it kind of thing with those books.
Okay, have you read the New Guardians of the Green Lantern?
No, I haven't been picking that one up.
No, because I've only seen a preview for it, and the preview I saw of it seems to suggest to me that Kyle got the ring there and then. So I was like trying to figure out if he was a Lantern before in this new continuity, or he was just getting like the ring then. And I thought if he, that kind of throws all the Parallax stuff through the Sinister Cold War and all that kind of governs off as well. So I didn't know if he's supposed to shed the light on it as well. So.
You know, Kyle Rayner was kind of my Green Lantern. I mean, I always liked the Green Lanterns. As I like the idea of sort of, you know, a space cop organization like the Jedi Knights, but it was just always done so badly until Ron Mars came around. And granted, he was just working with Kyle Rayner. But I liked what he did. And ever since I brought back Hal, I mean, it's similar to the Wally West situation where Kyle hasn't had much to do. It's a little frustrating.
Yeah, it was strange.
Say what?
Guy Gardner was my Green Lantern, but there you go. Okay, I'm sorry.
There was a point there where they had, you know, Wally West was the Flash and Connor Hawke was Green Arrow. And Kyle was the Green Lantern. And then they sort of backpedaled on all of those that they decided that, you know, they were better off going back to the Silver Age sort of, you know, we got Hal back as Green Lantern, we got Ollie back as Green Arrow, and we got, you know, now Barry back as the Flash.
You know, Ryan Choi was a fun character as the Atom. I really miss him.
I believe he's actually going to be the Atom again in the new 52.
Really?
That's my understanding, yeah, that they are going back to him as the Atom. So,
what's Ray Palmer doing?
They did have him show up in, I want to say it was Frankenstein, Agent of Shade.
Frankenstein, yeah. Yeah.
That he showed up as a scientist working for Shade, but I'm pretty sure they've said that I think just a bust shot of the Atom showed up in some of the artwork for JLA, and that it's probably going to be Ryan Choi as the Atom again.
Hmm. Well, that's cool.
Ray Palmer, he built the Amnest, whatever it's called, which is a super prison that shrinks people down, didn't he? So he's still got that kind of thing, the shrinking powers. So there is kind of a possibility that something may happen with him, but yeah, he's definitely, they haven't kind of just said, this is him, Ray Palmer now, he's got nothing to do with the Atom, so they've kind of still tweaked him, and oh, he's shrinking people still, so.
Hey, can you guys hear me okay?
Yeah.
Yeah, still coming through.
Sorry, I got a message from Skype saying there's no microphone detected when I got heard. I've had some sound issues in recent podcasts, so I was a little worried there for a second. So, all right, cool. Hey, can I ask you guys a question?
Mm-hmm.
I said this in my last podcast, but I'll throw it out there again because it amused me. Do you guys think some of Geoff Johns' villains remind you of like horror villains from the 80s? Because sometimes I was thinking of this when I was reading Aquaman number 2, and I remember back to some of the guys he had in the Yellow Lantern Corps and the Red Lantern Corps, and I was thinking, you know, some of like those guys from the Trench and Atrocitus and Crib and yeah, it just seems like maybe and that damn cat in the Red Lantern Corps. It just seems like maybe Leprechaun and Pumpkinhead will be great members of either the Red or Sinestro Corps.
I'd be surprised if someone hasn't stuck them in the background of one of the crowd scenes or something.
You're right. They do that quite a bit. I could see it.
That's gotta be.
Yeah. I could see Vulcan in the Blue Lantern Corps. You know, once you start talking about these mashups, you can just go forever. I was talking with someone on Twitter about, you know, what if lightsabers colors were equivalent to lantern rings?
Okay.
And, yeah, at that point, you're decreasing your chances of getting laid in the next couple of months dramatically. So you should just walk away from those conversations completely. So.
Okay. Right. Mace Windu purple lantern. Interesting.
He'd be a Star Sapphire.
Yeah, it doesn't work.
It might, because Mace Windu is a ladies' man. He's the Lando Calrissian of the prequels. I don't want to pursue that line of thought anymore. Sorry, but yeah. So what else? My big surprise in the new DC. I thought Green Arrow was going to suck, and I've really enjoyed it.
Haven't been reading that one. probably my biggest, I don't know if it's a surprise, but the books that I've had never read before and I'm really getting into are Swamp Thing and Animal Man, which are kind of being written as sort of two sides of the same coin, I guess, that they're not directly related, but they're both dealing with, you know, the Swamp Thing is dealing with the green and all of the plant life, and Animal Man is dealing with the red and all of the animal life on Earth being connected through sort of a, I don't know how to describe it, but there's almost a dimension or some sort of force that ties all of these things together. And so far, both of those books have been really interesting. The art is really cool. So, yeah, those have been fun to jump on.
Had you read any of them before previously, Animal Man or Swamp Thing?
I had not, actually. You know, that I had never gotten into either the, you know, the old Alan Moore Swamp Thing stuff or any of the Animal Man books, even though, you know, they have a fantastic reputation. I've just never gotten into any of those, so...
Yeah, with some of the coolest early Grant Morrison stuff.
Right. Yeah, yeah.
Back in the day.
Yeah, worth seeking out. But yeah, those have been a lot of fun. And like I say, for stuff that I was not reading before the reboot, there were a couple of things as far as disappointments go. I don't like the way that they went with Teen Titans. I would have rather seen something more like the current Young Justice cartoon, where it, you know, a little bit more faithful to the characters going in. And Firestorm is another one that I would have liked to see handled differently, but they're trying different things with the characters.
You know, I understand Firestorm was a lot of fun back in the day, but I've never picked up an issue of JLA, or, you know, it's kind of before my time, really. I've never been in the DCU when Firestorm was a active and viable character. So this is kind of my first introduction to him.
Yeah, he's a tricky character from, you know, what I have read of his books. That it's a hard character because there's very little to challenge someone who can totally transform the matter around him into anything else. I mean, it's a guy who can turn air into solid steel if he chooses, or... You know, he's a hard character to throw muggers at, or, you know, you've got to have a pretty powerful villain for him to bother fighting.
Do we know if this one can actually do that one, that though? Because we hadn't really displayed any powers, has he? He's kind of just flew around a bit and burnt people. He hasn't kind of transformed anything yet, so I'm thinking they may draw his power levels back slightly and kind of...
He's kind of a soccer hooligan with flight powers.
Yeah.
Sorry, that's a bad British joke, forgive me. you know, I heard Gail Simone's quitting the book.
Yeah, I was going to say that. Yeah.
Yeah, it was on Bleeding Cool, which I think you're active on the forums there, Adrian. That was the rumor. She denied it on Twitter. But, that's what they're saying. Apparently Dan Didio is not the nicest guy to work for, and his whole reputation is riding on this reboot working, which apparently it has, because DC was 51% of the market and Marvel was 30 this last month, which is the first time in 2 decades that's happened.
Mm. Good while,
yeah. Well, hey guys, we've been talking for about an hour. I'm ready to call it a podcast. Anything else you want to cover before we hit the big red button?
I don't think so. I think everything's good. I now knew about Doctor Who, so that feels good.
Hey, Adrian, can I ask you a horrible question that will offend you?
Go on then.
Bill and Ted and Doctor Who crossover.
Yeah, okay, that could be quite cool. Yeah.
Really?
From machines, making phone calls, yeah.
Okay, because Bill and Ted 3 is in development right now.
Really?
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. Aren't they like 40 years old now?
Keanu hasn't had much going on lately.
True.
I'm just saying. So, yeah, it's going to happen. So Mr. Calvert, any closing thoughts?
Nothing off the top of my head. It's cool getting to talk about this stuff and looking forward to doing more Mutants and Masterminds in the future.
Cool. Really appreciate your time, sir. I know you're busy. I appreciate you taking the hour out to talk to me, Adrian.
Oh, absolutely.
Okay. Well, hey, if that's it, guys, appreciate your time. Adrian, I think you should get to sleep immediately.
Thank you very much.
Appreciate your guys' time, and folks, tune in next time for the Banff Podcast. So, and we're off.